Next step number 642, September 24th, 2020.
Hi there, this is Susie from In His Shoes Ministries. Thanks for tuning into the Next Step with Father Vodskin. We are the voice of Armadoxy, a weekly podcast started in 2008 that looks at life through the lens of Armenian Orthodoxy. If you're joining us for the first time, we're so glad you're here. And if you're a regular listener, welcome back. In these weekly episodes, you will find that Father Vodskin's messages are timely, thought-provoking, and based on the solid principles of Christ's love, faith, and hope. Now, let's get ready to take the next step.
Sometimes you just don't understand how it all falls into place, but it does, doesn't it? You could attribute it to coincidence. You could attribute it to God's hand acting it out. You know, I'm sure we've all had that feeling, like, I shouldn't have been here, but because I was here, things just worked out the way they did. Was that just by chance that I was here? And it's a legitimate question. I think a lot of times people ask these questions when we can't explain things. I mean, isn't that really the heart of religion? Seriously, think about the stories and the mythology that we have within religion. It's about explaining things that are incomprehensible. And so we develop our systems. We come to understand the world by a set of stories, by a set of givens, given in the sense that we believe these. And so we establish creeds and we say, I believe these things, and therefore we make sense out of the world. And, you know, to test that religion always seems to be at the heart of, the conflict. The conflict that we have, people testing that religion. Well, does it really work? And then we get into this little argument where religious people will now try to test people who are testing them. I don't know if this is making sense to you, but it certainly does to me, which is important since I'm on this side of the microphone. Last week, I shared with you some ideas about Jesus and human rights. What would Jesus's take beyond some of the things that are going on in the world today, particularly here in the United States, where we have conflict, where we have people actually hurting one another because of their stance politically. I've never seen it in this chaotic of a situation as it is right now. I mean, I've been through a lot. You know, when you look at the 60s, you look at Vietnam, you look at the president being shot in broad daylight. You look at the 70s here in the United States, a president, a sitting president resigning, being forced out of office because of corruption. When you look at people demanding that corruption be cleaned up. You look at what happened during the 80s, the end of the Cold War by this statement that, you know, the only way to, what was it called? Mutual destruction, you know, if that was the guarantee, right? That was the guarantee of the Cold War. The reason why we didn't believe somebody else would press a button that would annihilate us was the idea that we could press a button and annihilate them. So because we had the capability of mutually destroying one another, we were in check. Yeah, not checkmate, but we were in check, and that was good enough. Then you go into the 90s, and you had a president caught in lying, and there was the word impeachment started to have a different tone to it. We had heard about impeachment up until the 90s. We had heard about impeachment. It was in the history books. It had happened to one president, Andrew Johnson. We remembered him because he was right after the famous Abraham Lincoln. And in our lifetime, we had heard about it during the Nixon administration, but Nixon resigned before impeachment could take place. But now there was a new way of looking at it with Bill Clinton. There was the idea that we can check and balance. You know, we can keep people in check by this word impeachment. And it became such a big, it became bigger than just the Clinton administration, because every administration after that, what was it, Bush, Obama, and now Trump, has had that word floated around. And, you know, in the case of President Trump, he was impeached. But we found out that it doesn't mean that you step out of office. We found out that that's not the end of your presidency. And it was brought home because he was impeached by the articles of impeachment came up in the House of Representatives. But the Senate acquitted him of those charges. So it's an interesting check and balance, which has been, you know, a cornerstone of the American democracy. But now we're finding out that, you know, this check and balance is is not working the way it had been intended, not because the system's bad, but because people have been able to manipulate it, manipulate the system. I'm using this word because, you know, you find manipulation, a lot of it, in religion as well. There's a guy named Mike Madoc. He's fascinating to me. Fascinating because, first of all, he comes on in the middle of the night. I know you, those of you who listen think that I don't sleep. I do sleep. I do sleep, but there are times where I'm just up, or, you know, I don't know. There's some things that are going in on my mind, and I can't help but watch this guy. This guy is incredible. So he runs some kind of a ministry, and I literally mean it, some kind of a ministry, literally in the sense that you don't know what that ministry is. He never once, in the when you watch his show, it's like about an hour. It's more like an infomercial than anything else. He's got a bank of people staying in front of computer screens and telephones. He's got a telephone number on the screen. And his message is a very kind of a wild message. He gets up and he says that God will give his favors when you give up yours. In other words, you have to invest. You have to plant a seed, he says. And he says, I'm looking for, the last number that I heard, he said, I'm looking for 300 people who the Holy Spirit is going to talk to that will plant a seed of $1,000. I know the Holy Spirit is talking to you right now. Get up off of the couch. And if you need to, put it on your credit card. Because God will not give to you unless you first give up and give to God. I'm going, wow, what, you know, where did this theology come from? But you know what? It's a manipulation, and the guy is doing it. The guy is doing it. And do the math. It's so easy. If he could do that in 1 hour, get 300 people at $1,000 each, just do the math. You're over a quarter of $1 million. You got $300,000 in an hour. And you see the phones are lighting up, unless it's just all an act, but there's a whole group of people. And then he prays by putting his hand up, and each of the operators have their hands on the computer screen. So no need for you to get involved over there. You know, you're getting this blessing through the screen. A manipulation of religion? Well, I would look at it that way. In fact, I push myself to try to understand what it is. It's more of a sociological thing for me, interest for me. It has nothing to do with religion. And in fact, so much so that when he gets to the point of praying and using the terms that he uses in praying, that I have to turn it off and move away. And here's the rub. I know that people can look at us, can look at me, and say, this guy is manipulating it too. Think about it. Think about it. Think about just orthodoxy in itself. Think about Roman Catholicism. You've got all of these different angles that people can, you know, you've heard it. I know you've heard it. You know, why are these people dressed in robes? Why do they have statues in there? Doesn't God say, do not have graven images? Doesn't God say that, or wasn't Jesus just a man who walked around without shoes, barefoot, and he was walking around the countryside? Why are these people all dressed up? And you know the criticisms. I don't need to tell you. We've heard it. And there's a lot of guilt that goes with it too. But it also depends on putting yourself in that time period. I mean, I don't buy that whole thing about Jesus was a guy who walked around. I mean, sure, it's a very romantic idea. It's a romantic idea that I will confess that really attracted me too, especially in the early years, especially during my college years, especially growing up in the 70s. Is between that 60s and 70s generation when there was a rejection of everything that was institutionalized, of authority, question authority. And there's Jesus standing up, long hair, beard, sandals, no shoes, a robe. Wow, that's exciting. And I then fast forward, you know, 50 years, just earlier this year, I was at a church where some young girl had come. She was not interested in going in church. She was just interested in bussing the tables because it was like that busy work, you know, getting the food ready for after church and da 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 da. And somebody made a comment like, hey, aren't you going to get dressed before, you know, it's time? And she goes, look at Jesus. Jesus was barefoot and he didn't have to get dressed up. Yeah, well, Jesus didn't get dressed up because there was no dress up aside from what he was dressed in, what he wore. What he wore, those sandals and that robe, was the dress up of the time. Right? Right? I mean, think about it. That was the dress up of the time. It's not like Jesus was, you know, Jesus would be just totally out of place if he sat around with a three-piece suit. Can you imagine among the shepherds and the farmers, and he's walking around in a three-piece suit? Think about it. But we get away with this because it's called a manipulation. It's called a manipulation. It's taking the statistics that you want, the things that make sense to you, instead of taking the entire program. And we do this. I've spoken a lot about this, about the cafeteria mentality. We do it and we get away with it in religion. And it's not as bad as you think it is. It's not unfair as you think it is, because we do it all the time. Even St. Paul, in writing the letters, the early apostolic letters, here was somebody who was not privy to the 3 years of teaching from Jesus' baptism to his crucifixion. Here was somebody that was not a witness to the resurrection per se until quite a bit later, when he was persecuting Christians, persecuting what they were doing, when he sees Jesus on the road and realizes, whoa! This is the one that I had heard had been crucified. And now I am a witness to that resurrection. And all of a sudden, you know, you have the letters that come out from St. Paul, and you say, well, here's the theology. Those letters were just exactly that. They were letters written to communities. In fact, we have a unique word for it too. It was called epistles. They were epistles. They were not letters like you and I would exchange between one another and say, you know, how's tricks, how are things going and everything. But these were letters written to the communities. So when you read the one that says letters to the Corinthians, there was a Christian community in Corinth. And they had all kinds of issues going on within that community. There was a Christian community in Rome. There was a Christian community in Ephesus. And these were the letters that we call the Ephesians, the Thessalonians. These were the ones at Thessalonica. So these names are not just, you know, made up names or names of people. These were communities of Christians. And they had serious problems. And you say, well, what serious problem was there in the first century? I mean, we've got mortgages, we've got misunderstanding. They had those misunderstandings. They had financial issues. Yes, they had a lot of the same issues that we have, but in different terms. Think about this. In the first century, a lot of the Christians thought that Jesus was coming back. We think it too, right? No, but these people thought that in their lifetime, they thought even better than their lifetime, they thought it was just right around the corner. An imminent end. In theological terms, this is called eschatology, okay? This is the theology concerning death, judgment, the final destiny of the soul. What's going to happen to your soul afterwards? This ecclesiology was wrapped up in this idea of an imminent end for the people in the first century. I mean, Jesus's time, or the Jesus's generation. They were sitting around thinking that, you know, the end was near. And it wasn't happening. So now, let me ask you, if you thought that tomorrow the world was going to end, what are some of the things you'd do? I think it would depend on a lot of different people, right? Some people would say, if I know that the world is going to end tomorrow, hey, I'm going to go out and take every risk and chance that I had never taken before. Other people would say, you know, this is my time to really go and be with the people that I love. Spend a few more minutes with the people I love. For others, maybe to fix some of the things, the problems that they had in life, in relationships, to go and say sorry to people. There's a whole host of different things you would do if you knew that tomorrow or within, you know, a week or two, the end of the world was going to come. Can you imagine? I said, like, yeah, we have mortgages today. Can you imagine? What about finances? What do you got in your pocket? You got some credit cards? If you knew that the world was going to end in a week, would you dare to go out there and max out a credit card? How about buying some stuff? Overbuying stuff? Okay, now let's get into some of more the intimate things, right? How about marriage? If you're single, you realize it's going to end in a week. Should you get married? How about if you knew that it was going to end in a year or 2 years? This is what St. Paul was writing to. He was writing to a community that was living with this expectation of an imminent end. When St. Paul says don't get married, it's not that he's objecting to marriage. It's like, hey, if Christ is coming in 6 months, don't get started with something. You know, don't. Take it easy. Instead, look at yourself. Make every moment. Pray unceasingly. Try to understand yourself. So, you know, what I'm saying is that idea of an imminent end affects everything else. Just like what's going on in our world today. The COVID-19, this coronavirus that is affecting everything that we're doing. Everything. Yeah, we're staying home. Our children are not going to school. How is that affecting everything? Well, if they're not going to school, the bus driver is going to be without work because he or she is not going to be able to drive those children to school, is without work, is not going to be able to pay the rent because he or she is without work. The children who go to school and expect their lunch, at least the one wholesome meal that they're going to get that day. I have a school within 2 blocks from us. There's an elementary school, and I pass by it in the mornings on my walk. And they line up, and they distribute food. And you know why? The children, these families come there because, you know, for so many of these families, that one meal that is given during the school hours, that lunch meal, is the most wholesome meal that they're going to get. And so now we have this obligation. You've closed down the schools. What about the food? What about the bus driver? What about the janitors? What about the teachers? How are you going to teach? I go in and there's somebody in the office whose child, he's taking care of his child during the day. And it's in a corner. This poor little kid sitting in a corner with a little iPad and headphones. And you just hear, because when you get into the office, you hear him talking to this two-dimensional screen. And you wonder, wow, this is learning. Or so they say. So all of these things are playing into it. And so when we start reading St. Paul, when we start understanding Scripture, you've got to put yourself in that condition. Now, that's why when I talk and when I share with you these stories, I try to share with you the stories that Jesus shares with us and lift them up out of time. What does that mean? For instance, the story of the Good Samaritan. Now, that is timeless. That has nothing to do whether you believe the end of the world is coming tomorrow. It's coming in 1,000 years. It's the reality of going out of your way to help someone else. How about the story of, let's take another one, the healing that takes place at the pool, right? It's about confessing Christ as your Savior, confessing that your faith is there. Now, that doesn't matter whether you believe tomorrow, the end of the world, or in 100 years. I guess you could argue that, yeah, there would be a little bit more urgency to confessing faith, right? Issues of faith, yeah, I would understand that. Yeah, there would be a little bit more urgency if you knew that tomorrow it's going to end and so on. But what I'm saying to you is that it really depends on the frame of mind, where you're at. And when you look at the world today, when we're living in a world where we have such things as misunderstanding, escalating to the point of death, of killing. Yeah. That plays into how we're interpreting. Now, I'm going to take this in the second portion, because right after we got off the air last week with our podcast, I was sharing with you these ideas of revolution, of things changing, of different religious leaders taking their message. We heard about the incident that took place in San Francisco, an arsonist burning down an Armenian center. I'm going to share with you some thoughts on that, okay? Right now, I'm going to play for you a song of the day, which we do every week. It's just, whether the world is ending tomorrow or in 1,000 years, we play the song of the week. And it's just something to give us a little bit of time to digest what was said, kind of put it in perspective, kind of understand where we're talking. And then we'll be back with the second portion of today's show. Today, I've selected a song from an album called Mask. I would say it's about 20 years old. It is by an artist named Aret Madilian, I believe. And I'm going to play a song for you called Free You Are Born. It's interesting because on the album he has two of them, Free You Are Born, followed by one, Free You Shall Remain. Let's start with the Free You Are Born. Thank you. Aret Modiglian is the performer, the composer. This is off an album called Mask, and it's pieces for piano. I'll put a link on today's show notes so you could check it out, get a little bit more familiar. It was interesting because, we've been talking about masks. It's sort of the defining symbol of today's age. The songs on this album are interesting too. Child, Free You Are Born, Free You Shall Remain. Okay, we just heard Free You Are Born. It gets dark. For truth is beyond the little man, the fool across a mirror, admiring himself, his distorted image, and hidden behind the mask. These are the songs. I mean, it does get a little bit dark. I tried to keep it on the light side. It was just, I felt like we needed to hear a little bit of piano. Probably because it goes from the simple to the complex. It's the simplicity of one note after the other, of touching one key and going to the next key. And you're going one note on top of the other. And then what happens? All of a sudden, it gets into a complex creation. And you think about it, I know this is over-philosophizing on the subject, but I want to show you where I'm at and really kind of putting it into what we're talking about today. It's the simplicity that we have in religion. It's really these basic ideas of loving and sharing, which become common to all main religions. And then the complexity we create by putting those one on top of the other and bouncing them off of one another, building harmonics to the point where it becomes so complex that we lose sight of what those simple tones are. And you get into some very dark places. And I think in this album, when I was reading, through the playlist on there, you just realize that, it's from the simple. From a child, he goes to a place by hidden by the mask. And it was fascinating for me, and I wanted to share that with you. And whatever the philosophical reason is why you're listening, I'm glad you listened. Like I said, this is our little time in between. This is, again, the artist on this one is Aret Modiglian. He is of Deleyaman. It's Aret Modiglian of Deleyaman. I don't know I imagine that's the group or it could be the company. It's called Mask Pieces for Piano. I'll put a link on today's show notes so you could check it out yourself, check out the wonderful music, and check out this artist. And as I always say, it's up to us to encourage this kind of art form, as well as all kinds of art form, right? So as I was sharing with you last week that we're living through some very different times, different in the sense that our basic freedoms are being compromised. And it's not the things that you're thinking. It's not about police state. It's about the freedom that we have to express ourselves. And we're seeing this all over. The idea that we used to be able to express ourselves freely about our beliefs, our philosophies. Now it's with fear. And that's the biggest danger that we have to free expression. What do I mean by this? For instance, I can have a different ideology than you do, right? I assume that I do. I don't think that there's a homogenous group of people that are listening, homogenous mindset to the group of people who listen to The Next Step. I think that people who do listen to The Next Step are probably, there's some threads that go through that unite us, but I think in like any other population, there are people that react differently, people who will like it, people who think that I'm, screwball or whatever it is. And, it goes on like that, and people are free to believe whatever they want to. But there is this basic respect. There's a basic respect. We're losing that respect. Or we have lost that. to the point where now it's like you're threatened. You turn off. We call it ghosting. You ghost people that you don't like. You don't follow them. You get rid of them from your life. And it's a very dangerous point we're in, because the exchange of ideas are the way and the manner in which we develop as a people. The question and answer, you know that my Bible studies, what are they called? They're called questions in faith. You ask the questions, let's answer it, let's study it, let's discuss it. And once that discussion is gone, what do you get into? You get into a lecture where it's a one-way conversation. A one-way, it's called a monologue as opposed to a dialogue. That's how simple it is. And we're becoming like that now. We're scared to express ourselves for fear that somebody on the other side might find something harmful or may bring harm to us because of what we believe. I mean, you should see some of the stuff that I get, the emails that I get. It's crazy. This is no threat to you. It's what we believe. It's what we believe. It's what our creed says. This is what I believe. This is interesting, and I'd take a little side note for this. We were driving to Fresno the other day. It's about a 3-hour drive Sunday morning, and we had satellite XM radio. They've given it to us for 6 months to try or something. I don't know. There's some kind of a deal, and we had it on. So we were exploring the different channels. It's interesting because they had a section. The way the satellite radio works is that they have groupings. So if you want to listen to pop music, you want to listen to rock music, rock and roll, you want to listen to jazz, those are groupings of music. Well, they also have different areas. Howard Stern, for some reason, I don't know, maybe he's the flagship or he's the owner of this satellite. He has his own category. It's just Howard Stern. Which goes to the point of why I'm not going to subscribe to it, why I would not pay any money for it. I mean, what a screwball, you know. I mean, there's somebody who's just wasting life, you know. So you've got Howard Stern as a category. Now, here's an interesting thing. After the jazz, after the contemporary and all the different kind of category, you have your talk shows and you have what's called entertainment. You have politics and news, and you have religion. So we open up the religion, and there's the usual, there's the Catholic channel, and there's a Billy Graham channel, you know, which is 24/7, just Billy Graham, his old radio shows, his calls to people, bringing them to Christ. These were under religion, understandable. Under entertainment, you had some old shows, like you had nostalgic radio or something like that. But who else was under there? Joel Osteen. What? What? Wait, wait, wait. Joel Osteen? You mean the preacher from Texas? Why is he not under religion? He's under entertainment. Interesting, isn't it? This is some secular organization called XM Radio who has decided where these people, what the categories are going to be. And they've decided that for some reason, Joel Osteen doesn't belong under religion, belongs under entertainment. And I got to admit, yeah, he is entertaining, but I do like him. And we did listen to him. It was Sunday morning. I do like him for a few reasons. He's uplifting. He's positive. But here, I'm going to give you the one reason why I really, really admire this guy. It's at the end of his program, he says, now, that does it. This is my message for you. He says, friends, I'm going to ask you to pray with me. And pray with me that Jesus, I invite you into my life to become my Lord and my personal Savior. And he says, friends, if you prayed that simple prayer, we believe that you were born again. That's it. What do I like about that? Those two words that he says, we believe. He doesn't say if you prayed that prayer, you're born again. He doesn't say, if you prayed that prayer, you go to heaven. He says, if you prayed that prayer, we believe that you go to heaven. We believe that you are born again. Whatever he says after the we believe is up to him, because he's now identified it, he's clarified it. This is what our set of beliefs are. You see what I'm saying? It's like being upfront. This is what I believe. When you come into an Armenian church, you come into an Orthodox communion, we're saying this is what we believe. When you go into anything, there are sets and standards of we believes. It was interesting. Last night we had a nice lecture for our Bridging Generations group, and it was about creeds, and it was about what we believe. What is it that we believe? Well, the Nicene Creed for us gives us the elements, and it gives us the outline of what we believe. Is that all we believe? Well, it's the outline. We believe in the Father, Son, Holy Spirit, and the universality of the church, which is apostolic, and it is the place where sins are forgiven. Now, you can argue anything you want. You can say the Bible says this and that. That's fine. This is what I believe. And that has merit for me and the people who want to believe, who want to follow, who find merit in the teachings of that belief. Okay? That's how simple it is. Now, I shared with you last week about in this belief system we have the central figure, which is Jesus Christ. And in Jesus' mission statement, which he gives in Luke chapter 4, he says, "For this reason I have come," you know, to heal the brokenhearted, to give sight and recovery of sight to the blind, to set at liberty those who are held captive. And so he gives this set of instructions of what his mission is about. And he goes on through his ministry to establish the church by saying, "On this rock I will build my church." And that rock is the profession of faith that Jesus Christ is the Son of God. Now, you believe that or you don't. You know, it's not a question of arguing. It's a question of, I want to explain to you, this is what it is. This is what I believe. It's not up for argument. It's not up for this is what I believe. And therefore, this is, you know, respect me for it. Now, we can have a discussion. You can come in and you can say, "Well, you know, what you believe doesn't make sense because..." And then a discussion means it's a dialogue. Two people, right? Two people. I would give you an argument or a discussion with you, and you would give yours. And at the end of the day, we may be swayed one way or the other, but it's not a question of beating up each other, hurting each other, because we do not see eye to eye on everything, because everything is influenced by an infinite number of factors that are affecting me. Do you think that if I had lost my job driving a bus of kids because the pandemic came and all of the schools were now closed and I cannot drive the bus, and therefore my income has stopped and I cannot pay my rent, I can't put food on my table. Do you not agree with me that my set of circumstances would be completely different as opposed to 1 year ago when I was putting food on the table, where I was paying my rent and going happily to church and listening to this preacher talk about how God loves me? Do you understand that I would be in a different state of mind? And it's not up to me to sit there and say that this man is wrong because during the time of crisis he is losing his faith. It's up to me to understand that there are so many factors playing into it. But the ones that we cannot understand is when violence comes up and when there is coercion and misunderstanding and intolerance. And that's what happened last week. I was sharing with you on last week's podcast the idea of faith, about different thinkers and how they approached it. We talked very briefly, but we did talk about Bonhoeffer. We talked about Martin Luther King that took the gospel and applied it to life. We looked at some of the Eastern thinkers, too, more popular Eastern thinkers like the Dalai Lama, who has become popular these days. Oh, his holiness in the world, you know, and very popular among the people. And then what happened is that within 2 days after that podcast, the first day, we had this incident that took place up in San Francisco, and then on Friday, the passing of Ruth Bader Ginsburg. In San Francisco, we have an Armenian center, and it was the target of arsons. Arsonists went in there and they burnt it down. This Armenian center, you should know, has historical significance for the community up there too, as well as practical. Many of the Armenian organizations used it as a center, including the ARF, the ANC, including the Hominutemen Scouts. It was right next to the St. Gregory Armenian Church. And for me personally, I had been there in the 60s when we went up as students of the Holy Martyrs Ferahian School. And it was sort of like we were on the road. I was a little kid. I was a student there. But they took us up there to kind of influence the community up there that it's time that you get a day school. I was very fortunate that I was one of the students of really a revolutionary for his times, and that was Gabriel Injajikian, the founder of the first Armenian day school. And we went up there, and we stayed at the center. We performed at the center. Later, going up there with my parents, it was the place where my parents were in this dance group, and they had a life there. Later, as serving in the Bay Area, it would be the place where we would go for different meetings. And finally, a few years ago, I was offered a position to be a principal, and there's where we went to have a meeting with the board of directors. And it was just interesting for me because so much of life was defined by the parameters of those walls that were there. People knew it as the Armenian Center. And so lo and behold, it becomes the target of hate. It becomes the target of intolerance. And although at this point they haven't made the connections, there is reason to believe that it is connected with a few months ago when the Kruzian Zakarian School in the same area, San Francisco, was the target of vandals. Now this center, the target of arsonists. And 2 days later, they took some pot shots at the signs in front of the school. Intolerance, yes, but now it's getting violent. It's getting to a point where, you know, you have to think about where we are as a human race. Seriously. Serious look at that. And I am not trying to over-dramatize this. It's the time for over-dramatization is over. This is a reality. We're confronted with this. It's like when I was standing in Rwanda at this genocide museum place, and I had 1 foot in the first genocide of the 20th century, namely being an Armenian. I'm standing there at a genocide museum of the last genocide of the 20th century. And so this unique individual in myself, I'm standing there with 1 foot in the first, 1 foot in the last genocide of the 20th century, and I'm spanning in this museum all the genocides that took place. Genocide, can you believe it? We're talking about it as if it's lemonade. Everybody should have one, right? And you're looking at this and you realize here is the biggest argument against evolution. People are trying to argue against evolution. Forget about the scientific one. Look at it culturally. Look at it anthropologically. Why do we solve all of our situations with hatred? With killing? With things that escalate to the point of genocide? And the same point is being made now. I mean, like, you know, back in 2005, 2005, the Catholicos of all Armenians, His Holiness Karekin II, on his trip to the United States of America, was greeted by the scholarly community. And I was one of the people that was invited to speak that day. I gave one of the greatest honors I've had in my life. You know what the topic was? The Armenian, the globalization and the Armenian church. What does it mean that we live in a globalized society? How does that impact our faith? And that was 2005, and now we're 15 years later, where globalization is a horrible word. That we shouldn't be talking about love your neighbor. We shouldn't talk about having neighbors. We should all be into our own programs. We should all be into ourselves. Basically, who is my neighbor? They asked Jesus, and Jesus should have said, not the person who is hurting and you extend yourself. Who is my neighbor? It's the people who is in the economic and social status that you are in. That is your neighbor. But Jesus doesn't say that, does he? He gives the globalized version of it. He gives that incredible version of it that says your neighbor is the Samaritan, who is somebody you hate. In other words, in that society, they hated Samaritans. So when they said, who is my neighbor? Jesus said, it's that Samaritan who did the right thing. It would be like right here, if you stood in the South, if you went into Kentucky with everybody voting, with the jury coming out and saying that these men were innocent, and with all the hatred and everything going on the streets, if like somebody said, who is my neighbor? He would point to the black man and say, it's that black man that got up and helped you during your time of need. If he was standing in the middle of the Arab-Israeli conflict and the Jews asked him, who is my neighbor? He would say, it's that Arab over there. And if the Arabs asked him, Jesus, right now, who is my neighbor? He'd say, it's that Jew that's standing over there. The one that did the right thing, that did the work of God. And if he was standing in front of Armenians, he would say, it's that Turk that helped you out. If he was standing in front of the Turk, it'd be that Armenian that you don't even understand that came to your aid. In other words, yes, that globalization, that globalized society was already defined in the time of Christ vis-a-vis that very simple and profound message of the Good Samaritan. In San Francisco, hatred raised its head up. And unfortunately, our Armenian people have not seen that this is an opportunity for us to really make a statement. In fact, what did they do? They called a press conference and they brought in the usual politicians. They had a bunch of priests standing there, but they had brought in the usual politicians who gave their word that, you know, things like this shouldn't happen and they won't happen. Yeah, thank you. Thank you. They even brought in the treasurer. I can't remember if it was the county treasurer or the state treasurer. Like, what? There's a hate crime taking place. Let's bring in the treasurer. In other words, we need people so that people will take us seriously. Instead of, we need an ideology. We need a thought. We need a faith. We need an I believe so that people will take us seriously. Yeah, they blew it. But it's not the first time we do that. We do that. I think it's a reflection of our self-worth, you know? Not feeling enough. It's the same thing on April 24th, going out there and begging people to validate something that you know that happened, you know? So a day later, Ruth Bader Ginsburg passed away. She was somebody very inspiring to many people at many different levels. She stood up for people about gender equality. Most people know her as somebody who fought for gender equality. In fact, they even dubbed her sometimes as what she did for gender equality is akin to what Thurgood Marshall did for black civil rights here in this country. And Ruth Bader Ginsburg, in much more than gender equality, was an inspiration. She became a pop figure, in fact. For me, here's a little something that stuck out for me. You know, she comes from the Jewish tradition, whether she practiced it or she didn't. She came from that tradition. In that tradition, it is the tradition of the prophets. Who were the prophets? These were people that spoke out for people who had no voice. Yeah, the prophets spoke out for people who had no voice. In a very real way, I think that Ruth Bader Ginsburg was that person. She's lying in state right now as we're recording. She becomes the first woman to ever lie in state in the Capitol in Washington, D.C. And in the she was the second woman to be on the United States Supreme Court. Right now, there are three others. It is a diverse Supreme Court. Did you know that on the Supreme Court right now, there are four Catholics? I think, if I remember right, before, I think just a couple of years ago, there was a 6-3 division in the religion. Six of the nine members were Roman Catholic. It's interesting, huh? It's interesting. You would think that in a country such as this that is founded on Protestantism, with the Protestant work ethic, it's interesting that the Roman Catholic religion would dominate the Supreme Court. But you understand it also because of the Jesuit background and the sharp, sharp legal minds that come out of that Jesuit tradition. Anyway, that is a story for another day, but we do take a moment and pause and remember Ruth Bader Ginsburg for the work that she did, for speaking out for the people who could not speak out for themselves. And it becomes a reminder for us about the importance of faith, of what my belief is. It's we believe. This is what we believe. And because of this belief, we continue and we move forward. Let's take a break for today and wrap it up after Susie makes her announcements.
Susie here again, popping in to say thank you to you, our listeners. We are thankful for your prayers, kind expressions, and donations. You make this podcast possible. Your listenership and support has allowed us to grow and expand our ministry around the globe. We are grateful to be able to touch so many lives and create lasting friendships. At epostle.net, we are determined to bring apostolic evangelism to an electronic world and look forward to your continued support. Thank you and God bless. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vazgen.
Thank you, Susie. You know, I woke up this morning to my email inbox. It was somebody well-intentioned had sent me an email saying, buy this book and read it. That's all. You know, buy it and read it. What's the book? It's called Armenian Identity in a Changing World. Isn't that what we deal with over here? Isn't what we're doing about that? Isn't that what it's about? Yeah. The world is changing, and how do we define ourselves? Well, to tell you the truth, everybody tries to do that. Everybody tries to do it the best they can. I think that we have the components. We have the tools by which to identify our lives. It's the tools that our forefathers saw in the power of Jesus Christ. And it's the same tools that, you know, if you think about it, these are a group of people, the Armenians, who withstood all kinds of pressure, all kinds of difficulties, and were able to succeed not only in survival, but in living, and became a very positive expression of that faith. And that's what we come to do here with Armadoxy. In other words, let's strip down the faith from all the hoopla of who gave what they're doing, and let's talk about the basic faith. Let's forget about who has the best food fairs and who makes the best kebab, who makes the best pilav. Let's talk about, yeah, you'd think that that's funny. You could even hear the dogs howling in the background. They thought it was so funny. Yeah. It's not funny. There are people who do that today. They define their churches by the foods that they make instead of defining it by the pure faith that we have. And that's what we're doing with Armadoxy. And I'm glad you're on with me. I'm glad you're on board. I'm glad you're on board. And I can't thank you enough for your prayers, your support of this ministry. Listen, I'm calling it a day. I want to thank you for joining us today. Hope you enjoyed today's show as much as we enjoyed producing it for you. Keep your prayers going for this ministry. Keep your prayers for the word that we're getting out. This Sunday, I'm going to be in a place called Rancho Mirage, and I've given my commitment for the next 3 months. In other words, this fall season that we have. I know those of you down under, it's spring has started, but for us, it is fall. We are in the fall, autumn season. I've given a commitment of every other Sunday being down there. It is the St. Garabed Armenian Church in Palm Springs, or Rancho Mirage specifically. If you happen to be in the area, join us. It's a beautiful, quaint little church. Has a unique little style to it. I'd love to share in the Holy Divine Liturgy with you if you happen to be there. Listen, on behalf of the wonderful people who put today's show together, Susie, our producer, Ken, our technical director, this is Father Voskin, inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
And now here's the fine print.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskulledness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of vpostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
Daddy, old man, you failed in a prep.